This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Let's get a preview of The Guardian this week, which airs Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on AMI Audio and features readings from the pages of The Guardian newspaper. Dawn Dickinson is the producer of that program, and she joins us now to give us a closer look at a few of this week's articles. Hey, good morning, Dawn. Oh, do we have Dawn on mute, or does Dawn have Dawn on mute? Oh, I hear Dawn. Hello, Dawn.
Hi.
Hey, there we go. You see that? The magical world of technology coming together in a beautiful way. Hey, Dawn, let's just start by looking abroad, which we often do with The Guardian, and starting in Malta with their cash for passports scheme that's allowing applicants to possess a Maltese passport through a government investor scheme. So, Dawn, first and foremost, what is it about a Maltese passport that is so valuable? I mean, beyond just, of course, Malta being a beautiful place.
Well, yes, of course, it's a lovely place. And the reason it's so valuable is it allows access to the EU, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these individuals, these super, super rich Russians, Chinese, Saudis, they would be very restricted, you see. But because Malta is allowing them to come in for a substantial amount of money, this is all because there's been a big leak, from a passport brokerage firm, and they revealed that all these very, very rich individuals are now securing unrestricted access to the EU via this Maltese cash for passport scheme that requires them to spend a little over 3 weeks in the country.
Right. So walk us through how this is working, Dawn, in terms of how much cash we're looking at and what the process is, just in case anybody's taking notes and wants an EU passport and is feeling super rich.
Yeah, just in case you've got €1 million lying around.
Yeah, you
right?
know, just a couple bucks in the bank.
Well, the disclosures are pretty alarming. The resident loophole that this is that has been revealed enables these customers for an outlay of around €1 million under the scheme to successfully claim that they are genuinely linked, okay, to Malta, which is a key legal requirement, while spending just a couple of weeks holidaying there and making a few superficial gestures. Such as, and I love this, renting a yacht or donating. What's the last time you rented a yacht there, Dave?
Oh, you know, I don't like to talk about my social life on the air, Dawn.
Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah. It's been at least a couple of weeks since I rented a yacht.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Maybe in August this year. We'll see. COVID depending.
Yeah. If you look at the graphic there, you can see that, I mean, it's an amazingly rich area and they're just adding to their coffers big time, the government, because, of course, they're allowing this to happen.
So, Dawn, what kind of laws are in place to potentially stop this? Maybe not inside Malta, but within the EU?
Oh, well, there's all kinds of laws restricting this kind of stuff. I mean, this is completely illegal. The disclosures from this leak have alarmed the European Commission to no end. And they've recently initiated legal proceedings against Malta over its sale of, and they're called golden passports. The Commission has accused Malta of selling citizenship, boy, that's a hard one, which enables full access to the EU to individuals with little or no connection to the country. I love this. The Maltese government rejected any suggestion that its residency requirements are a sham, and it argued that it, rather than the EU, has the legal right to issue passports to their country and that applicants are security checked before receiving a residency permit.
How much is the Maltese government talking to applicants and maybe advertising this to applicants about how much they might be able to get away with?
Okay, well, this is the joke of all time. I mean, when you read this, it's just it's unbelievable. The government, the Maltese government, has asked applicants to issue a covering letter. Now, this is really, oh, heavy-duty legal here, Dave, you know, a covering letter provided to them showing that the applicants are interested in residency and have genuine links to the country. They also suggest that they open a bank account. No kidding. Mm-hmm. Donate to local charities and initiate memberships in local clubs. This would all demonstrate links to the country. In reality, this link showed that no applicant was declined on the nature of this covering letter. Later, government advice seemed to also suggest that 2 weeks was sufficient for residency. So it's fairly blatantly obvious, Dave, that they're doing this for it's strictly a cash deal, you
mm-hmm,
know?
Mm-hmm. Why bother taking a hotel in Malta when you can just take an apartment for a couple months and next thing you know, boom, EU passports. Here I come, Spain. Dawn, yeah. Let's move from Malta to the Netherlands, where the native wild bee population in the Netherlands has been in decline since the 1940s, but that trend seems to be stemming prominently from agricultural areas of the country, and things are changing. So, Dawn, what's the buzz about the Dutch national pollinator strategy?
What's the buzz? Okay, well, the pollinator strategy is things such as bee hotels, bee stops, and what they're calling a honey highway that are only some of the components of the national pollinator strategy that the Dutch are crediting with keeping their urban bee population steady in recent years after a really worrying decline over a long time. So they're very much trying their best to kind of improve things, and it's working. That's the great thing about it. This is the good story today.
We like that. We definitely like that. So, Dawn, what were some of the causes of the decline in the overall bee population?
Yeah, well, the native wild bee population in the Netherlands had been in decline since the 1940s, really a long stretch of time, a trend that seemed to stem predominantly from agricultural areas, as you mentioned. Until 50 years ago, these areas had a myriad variety of wildflowers that sustained healthy bee populations. But the pressure, of course, on farmers for increasing farmland and output meant that farms no longer had space for nature. Large swaths of agricultural land were almost devoid of wildflowers, leading to the decline in bee numbers. So it was really getting, you know, really serious, you know, because the Netherlands, I mean, they're usually pretty good when it comes to their environment, you know, because of the fact that the country is small. But in this particular case, because they were putting out so much in agriculture, they let it slide. And bees need wildflowers.
Dawn, we know how important bees are in any ecological system, point final, period. But why were they so vital to the Netherlands?
Okay, so here we go. The Netherlands is the world's second largest exporter of agricultural products. I had no idea either. Yeah. After the U.S., recognizing the crucial role played by wild bees in the population of food crops, especially fruits and vegetable plants, a national pollinator strategy was announced in 2018 to create increased opportunity for, and I love this, B&Bs, otherwise known as bed and breakfasts for bees. The strategy was signed by 43 government and non-government partners, including 70 initiatives aimed at creating nesting sites and strengthening their nesting sites for bees and strengthening their food supply, in the process enabling nature and agriculture to coexist. Wonderful, wonderful story.
Well, Dawn, that segment was about bees. I give it an A. That was absolutely stinging. Dawn, all the best to you. Thank you for taking time for us today, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, Dave. Take care.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.